15 years ago, in 2006, in the spring, a group of rabbis in Brooklyn, New York, walk into a facility to check out supervision. That's not an unheard of or unexpected experience. But the supervision which was being explored here was not your standard kashrut supervision. It was a group of rabbis who were visiting an infertility clinic. And I want to be makir tov to YU Center for the Jewish Future. At that time, Rabbi Kenny Brander was at its head. To Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman, my mentor in this, I was one of a small group of young rabbis who had the opportunity to take a course in medical halacha focused on issues related to infertility. And we went to see Dr. Richard Grazi in his clinic called Genesis Fertility in Brooklyn. That was in March. And then we made a later visit to an infertility clinic . It was fascinating. It was totally fascinating because we were actually not just able to learn all about the process, but we were actually witnessing some of the hashgacha, the supervision that was happening there. Because if you look on the first page, you'll see the picture from the left side. Yes, the man who is wearing scrubs and has all dark hair, that's me. You can see how old that picture is. And we're looking at a tank. You see on the right side of the photograph, that tank is filled with liquid nitrogen, which is cryopreserving vials. And each of those has a special lock on it. A special, you used to have for chickens, you used to have plumbas. So they basically have a plumba on each of them that they are supervised, that they belong to who it says that they belong to. And this was part of a course that was organized together with, who am I to say, but I think it's Muscom, that this is the premier worldwide entity focused on infertility resources for the Jewish Torah community, and that is Machon Pua. We had the opportunity to have a course that was led, it was co-led by Rabbi Dr. Reichman and Rav Menachem Burstein. Rabbi Nachum Burstein is the head of Machon Pua, and it was an amazing, amazing experience. So we were in this lab. There was actually, if you see on the right side, if you're interested, there was a New York Times article about our visit to Genesis Fertility. And of course, as you could imagine, in preparing for today, I went to the filing cabinet and I took out the files from this course, which include the syllabus. There are many benefits to being a pack rat, Baruch Hashem. We started in the fall. We continued through the spring. We had the opportunity to hear from, we alternated weeks between medical professionals and Rabban and Rosh Yeshiva Poskim, from Rav Menachem Burstein, from YU Reitz Rosh Yeshiva. We went to this clinic. We also went to the clinic with Dr. Harry Lyman, which was called the Montefiore Institute of Reproductive Medicine and Health. It was amazing. This story, the story of a group of rabbis learning about the medicine of infertility, brings us to the most curious story that we studied in all of the Limud of the entire year. It's a bizarre legend, and whether or not it's true is highly suspect, but this story does shape a lot of the halachic discussion in the controversy surrounding what we call assisted reproductive technologies, which is what we were studying that year, which is why we were in this fertility clinic in the first place. The story appears in source number one in a book called The Alphabet of Ben Sira. This book alone is a bizarre book, highly questionable, collection of teachings or legends in the period of, it was written over 1,000 years ago, based on a character named Ben Sira. So if you Google Ben Sira, you will find Ben Sira was a Jew who collected and wrote up a book of witticisms, of thoughts, of insights, and it's assumed that he lived around the 2nd century before the Common Era. So this is a much later text based on the wisdom of this man, Ben Sira. Ben Sira's wisdom, the book of Ben Sira, is part of the non-canonical Jewish texts. But once in a long while, Ben Sira is quoted in the Gemara and statements in Chazal. So even though he's not part of the canon, he's somehow kind of like floating around. This alphabet, it's not from Ben Sira, but it's based on the stories of Ben Sira. And in this story, I'm not telling you it's true. I'm just telling you what it says. There was a story. Because the Ben Sira story says that there were, in the top line and the underline, Shlosha Shinoldu Below Tashmish. There were three people who were born without intercourse. The mother of Ben Sira, the mother of Reb Zera, and the mother of Reb Papa. Nobody else on that list. That's it. Those are the three people on the list. How is it possible? What does it mean that the mother of Ben Sira conceived without intercourse? So if you look in the middle where the underline is, Le Ben Sira Haya Aviv. This legend has it that Ben Sira had a father. His mother, Bito Shel Yirmia Haisa. She was the daughter of the prophet, the Navi Yirmiyahu. This is the man who prophesied at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, hundreds of years before then we attribute Ben Sira to living, but this is the story. That one happened, Pam Achas, one time. Halach Yirmiyahu LeBeis HaMerchatz. Yirmiyahu went to a bathhouse. It used to be that there were public bathhouses where people would bathe. Rav Schwartz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, he told me that when he came to his first Rabbanus, I think it was in a town in Rhode Island, he said that many of the women did not want to observe Taharas HaMishpacha because the mikvah was attached to the public bathhouse. He said it was terrible. Baruch Hashem, today we have beautiful mikvahs that have privacy, but he says that's what it was like in the 1950s. So there was a public bathhouse. Yirmiyahu went there. V'nra sham rishoyim mishevet Ephraim. He saw wicked people from the tribe of Ephraim. Now, how they know it, it's Ephraim, but I'm just telling you what it says. Motzi and Shechva Zera, that they were emitting seed into the bathhouse. Because in those days, in the days of Tzidkiyahu, the people were wicked. Rachman al-Tzlan. And it describes Yirmiyahu Hischil Lohochichon. Yirmiyahu began to rebuke them. And what did they say? They threatened him. They coerced him. Why are you, you're not supposed to rebuke us? Lo tosis mikana shetasa shetasa kemoseinu. You won't leave here until you do what we're doing. Yirmiyahu Hanavi. And he begs them, he says, bevakasha mikem, please, leave me alone. He says, I swear I won't tell anybody what happens here. And then they tell him, yeah, but we have a tradition that Nebuchadnezzar took a shvua and you exposed his shvua. So he did. And we know that Rahman al-Islam, there were cases of coercion of circumstances like this during the war when the Rishoyim, they were looking for medical experiments in certain ways, so they would force men to produce semen. Such a thing. So Yirmiyahu did this in Hiskil Lakalo Yomo. He began to curse the day that he was born. He began to curse. And what happened? Nasa bo nisim, a miracle happened. Va'omar hazera, and the seed remained. Velo isriach, and it did not rot. Because the Gemara has a tradition that after 72 hours, we have a machlokas in the Gemara, but we have a tradition about 72 hours, the fertility capacity goes down. Ad sheba bito lebeis hamerchatz, until his daughter arrived at the same bathhouse, in the same bath, v'nichnas hazera b'meya, and she was inseminated from this sperm. And who was the child from this? Benson. This is the legend in the alphabet of Ben Sina. That's what it says. So, what that?
I was just saying Ben Sina.
That, so that's why, if you look in some of the later Achronim, they say, you know why it's called Ben Sira, because it's like Ben Zera. Exactly. That's exactly what's the allusion in the name. Great. So you would say, this is just a strange sense. Totally bizarre. But what's interesting is that the Halakha Ma'aril, so he's living in the 13th century, 14th century, he is the father of Ashkenazi Minhag. Every time you turn the Shulchan Aruch, you turn five pages, the Ramah says, Ashkenazim, this is what we do. In the parentheses, it usually says, Ma'aril. His Rebbe was Rav Shalom of Neustadt. They had old Ashkenazi Minhagim. And guess what the Ma'aril writes? Ben Sira, source number two, who hanolad mizera Yirmiyahu. He is born from the seed of Yirmiyahu. Hoyso ruchetzes debas Yirmiyahu, hoyso ruchetzes achar avia ba'ambati. It doesn't tell you the whole story about the Bnei Ephraim. It just says that she was in this bath. Vikolta hazera. And everybody said that she was a pious woman, she had never been previously married, and yet she became pregnant. Vaholil denolad miklita zera belotash mishkoro ben zera, exactly what you said. So because he grew up and the kids made fun of him in school, they changed him from ben zera to ben sira. That's what it says in the Ma'aril. Later authorities totally reject this, but once it enters the Ma'aril, so now it becomes a topic of halachic discussion. Why are we talking about this today? Because this idea of bathhouse insemination, which is mentioned in the Gemara Maseches Chagiga, Daf Tesvav, as a question of, is it possible for a woman who is a besula, she is physically a virgin, but at the same time, she is somehow pregnant, is that possible? The Gemara has a discussion about that. It has the possibility of ibur ba'ambati, bathhouse insemination. This was a common discussion. And the reason why it's important to think about why it's a source of big time controversy is because this creates the possibility for assisted reproductive technologies. We are at a time right now where many people struggle with fertility. This is the time to think about it. Because this is the first time that as Torah, Masorah observant Jews, we're really faced with it during this Tekufa before Sarah has a child. So she's facing an infertility challenge. So last week, she has a suggestion. What was her suggestion last week? Maybe Avraham should marry Hagar. This week, she's blessed with a child. But for many, many years, she's facing infertility. According to the NIH, after 1 year of trying, which is when we were learning this, and I'm just giving you what I have understood, that was kind of the rule of thumb certainly in the Torah community, of when somebody would be categorized as having an infertility challenge. If a couple doesn't get pregnant after 2 months, that's not called an infertility challenge. They wouldn't raise an alarm. But after 1 year, if a couple was trying to have children and they weren't capable, they weren't able, it wasn't successful, the Rosh Hashanah didn't bless them with that, that's called, in the Parsha, we would say, of an infertility challenge. The numbers, according to the NIH, are between 12 and 15% of couples. So that means when you go into a shul with young couples, and you look around, it's likely that one of the six couples that's sitting there is having an infertility challenge. That's the numbers. At the time, I remember the numbers being a little bit different, but now the NIH says that a third is associated with what we call male factor infertility. A third is female factor infertility. And then the worst, the most difficult, is unexplained infertility. They can't figure it out. And this is why people turn to Machon Pua. Because in Machon Pua, they have an amazing array of resources that give you practical guidance and halachic support. Because there are a lot of questions that come up. When a couple faces an infertility challenge, they have to go through a battery of tests to figure out, is it male factor? Is it female factor? Is it something they can't figure out? And each of those has a whole series of halachic questions. So I have here, as you can see, pages and pages of diagrams and medical processes and all kinds of things and checklists that you go in through with a halachic sensitivity to go through to figure out what can and should be done to assist to fulfill this mitzvah of Peruvu, which the Gemara calls a mitzvah rabbah. Such an important mitzvah. So the question is, Sar Imenu, she faced an infertility challenge. Did she have an obligation to pursue assisted reproductive technologies? Let's say she were to pursue assisted reproductive technologies. Would that child be her child? Would that child be Avraham's child? The case that we're going to, the simple, the basic, we're going to start mamash at the bottom, the basic level, and this has been done for many, many decades, is what we call IUI, intrauterine insemination, where you have sperm, it's put into a vial. Now they'll usually wash it, they'll clean it, they'll make sure that it's good. And then, I think that the scientific term is they will spritz that. I don't know if that's what, is that the medical literature, I think it says spritz, into the uterus of the woman in the hopes that it will catch, they'll find the exact time when the woman is ovulating and the whole, all right, this is not the birds and the bees. You know, everybody will figure that part out. But this is, this has been going on for many, many, many decades. There's the more modern procedure, which has a whole other host of halakha complications, which they probably didn't have in the times of Avram and Sarah, and that's called IVF, which means in vitro fertilization, where you actually fertilize the egg with the sperm in vitro, which means in glass. So one of the things that we saw when we were visiting these labs are the frozen embryos, but also you look, you can see, they show you in the microscope, they have tiny little tweezers where they take one little spermula and one little egg and they, you know, they make a shidduch, that's it, just right there on the spot. We had to go, obviously we went at 6 o'clock in the evening because we had to go after all the patients had left. It was really very fascinating. So what's Sarah gonna do over here? What's the status of a child that is born through this procedure of intrauterine insemination, where it's not through the normal intercourse of a man and a woman that the woman becomes impregnated, but it's through the intervention of a doctor, a medical professional, who's introducing the sperm of the husband, let's go with that, of the husband, into the wife. That's going to be the first question. That's the first question. The second question is going to be, and this happened in several cases, which is why you need hashkacha, although it happened more in earlier decades, in the first half of the 20th century than it does today, not so common, but you had many women who came to a fertility specialist in the first half of the 20th century. There were issues with fertility, and all these women, they start having babies, and all the babies have a strange, striking resemblance to the doctor. So hence, hashkacha being introduced. Sometimes they would introduce their own to mix it in, boosters, whatever. That's a whole other story. Dr. Reichman, Rabbi Reichman, he has a ton of, there's a lot of research on this, obviously. He has a few articles of his own, which if you're interested, I can share with you. There's a ton of literature on this, both in the general secular literature about this issue, but in Torah sources, tracing the origins of IUI, when it started, and how to keep track of it. But now, if Sarah Imenu goes to the local IVF doctor, to the local fertility specialist, they said, we're going to take a sample of Avram Avinu's zera, we're going to introduce it. So the question becomes, well, is this Yitzchak ben Avram? Is it still Yitzchak ben Avram? So the Chelkas Mechokek, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, you see here on source number 3, he says, what about this case? Yesh l'stapik mishin is Abra ba'ambati. The case of bathhouse insemination. In that case, there was seed, sperm from a man, which is now being introduced into the woman. Im kiyem ha'av pruravu. Does the sperm donor, in this case the donor is the husband of the woman, does that fulfill the mitzvah pruravu for the father? The imikri b'no l'chol davar. Is that child called his child for all purposes? So for example, this child grows up, let's say it's a girl, she meets a boy. Does she have to worry that maybe this boy is actually a brother of hers from some, and this is why the notion of sperm donors gets really, really complicated. Now, we have the concept of following the rove, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but that's talking when you're talking about a donor. But in this case, it's just the concept of paternity. And he quotes from, the Chelkas Mechokek quotes from the Ma'aril, the Likutei Ma'aril of the story of Ben Sira, what we said. He introduces a new story about Yirmiyahu, that Yirmiyahu actually had nothing to do with Ibra Bambati. He was engaged in creating a person based on the Sefer Yetzirah, which is attributed to Avram Avinu. But this Ma'aril becomes the source of this suffix in the Chelkas Mechokek. And the Taz in his Sagos, he says, no, maybe it's not the same. But the majority opinion accepts the position that a child which is born, who he or she is born through IUI, is considered b'no l'chol davar of the father. Who concretizes this ruling? Turn the page. The Gaon, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Livracha. This is a fascinating article that was published in the New York Times May 5th, 1975. Great picture of Rav Moshe in his study in the Lower East Side on the telephone answering a shaila. Right here, New York Times. The author is Israel Schenker. The article in the Times is called Responsa, the Law as Seen by Rabbis for 1,000 Years. Where is it? So Rav Moshe is dealing with all kinds of modern shailas. You can read the article on your own. It's fascinating. This Chuvan, Evan Ezer, Chelek Aleph, Simon Yud, Rav Moshe writes, in the context of IUI, V'zera zeshe yotzi yachniso b'shvoferes labetan ha'isha, this sperm which is going to be procured. Now, sperm procurement is a very complicated halachic question, which is what Rav Moshe dealt with in the previous paragraph. It's beyond the purview of what we're going to talk about today. You'll insert it b'shvoferes. Shvoferes means a tube. Into the woman, b'yamim shiru'uya leheirayon, in the times that it is feasible for her to become pregnant, af shelo tavla, even though she has not yet gone to the mikvah, that doesn't matter. V'yotzei b'zeh mitzvahs pruravu k'shetolid ha'isha yidei zeh. Rav Moshe says the father is in fulfillment of the mitzvah pruravu. Whether it is according to the Beis Shmuel, which is after the Chelkas Mechokek, who says yes, and even according to the Taz, and it is b'no l'chol davar. Why? Rav Moshe argues that the difference between this and bathhouse insemination is that in the case of bathhouse insemination, even though there was a suffix in the Chelkas Mechokek, that's only because there was no proactive process. There was no maisa. But here, there was an action that was undertaken to inseminate the woman. He says, for sure, everybody would agree that would be Puruvu, and it would be Beno L'chol Davar. So that's the first half of the question. But the issue becomes, and this is where the controversy really got going, what happens when the husband's sperm is not viable? Either esospermia or some other issue. Now that's why IVF is so important, because IVF, theoretically, there could be millions and millions of sperm that are no good, but they can find one little one that's good, and they can put it together with the egg, that would solve the problems. It's not inexpensive, it is expensive. But the question becomes, what happens with a sperm donor? So Moshe, you see in this article, he's sitting, Bishalva, in his office. But Rabbi Tendler, Sefer Tzadik Levracha, we mentioned last week, he just passed away. He was Rav Moshe's son-in-law. And he said that Rav Moshe, when he gave the psak regarding donor sperm, he was harassed. He was attacked. Rabbi Tendler said that there were people who showed up to his apartment on the Lower East Side at 2 o'clock in the morning and started banging on the door to wake him up. It was such a heated controversy that people were attacking Rav Moshe Feinstein. What was such a controversy? Already in Europe, there was some discussion about this issue of sperm donors. There was a tshuva, the Chelkas Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Breish, and others, who were discussing the core question, okay, even if you could tell me that the child, through IUI, is misyachis, is related to the father, the donor, what happens when you're mixing someone else, their sperm, into a marriage, a woman who's married to somebody else? So the Chelkas Yaakov first is discussing, should we even be engaged in these kind of ART, assisted reproductive technologies? Or should we not be mixing into this? There's a Gemara in Brachos that talks about Chizkiyahu, who didn't want to have children because he saw in Nevuah that they wouldn't be righteous. The Gemara says, "Behadi kivshi derachman olam alach." What are you getting involved in the secrets of God? Only the Rebbe Shlom gives life. So what are you getting involved for? Chelkas Yaakov was very, very strong, not in favor. So what's the din? So Rav Moshe was of the opinion, you see it here in that same tshuva, source number 5 now, V'chein havlad hu kosher. Rav Moshe writes that if you have a Jewish sperm donor, there's a separate question about non-Jewish sperm donors, but that wouldn't create mamzerus. If you have a Jewish sperm donor and a married woman, the child that's born from that is not a mamzer, it's kosher. The child is kosher. Why? Hu rak, because mamzerus is only kishiyeh al yedei bia. It's only when a married woman has a physical, intimate intercourse and action with another man that the child of that union would be a mamzer. But because this insemination happens with no actual intercourse, there's no physical interaction between these two people, Rav Moshe's opinion was that the child is not a mamzer. Rav Moshe got a maelstrom of attacks. He writes in the Lei Ritshuva, you see here on the left side, what I wrote in Simen Yud and Simen Ayin Aleph in the Igros Moshe on Ivan Ha'eser, this is later, this was in 1962. Kibalti Mechdova Ha'aruch Ma'od, I received your long letter, Hamole Divrei Cholchacha Tochacha Al Kol Gedosav, that is filled with words of rebuke, piling on rebuke on Rav Moshe. Why? Because Rav Moshe was opposed by another Gaon, a fiery tzaddik. His name is Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, known as the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav has multiple tshuvas. I did not go through all of them. I went through a couple of pieces of some of them. Multiple tshuvas, kufches, kuftes, kufyud. Even though he writes in one of them, he says, you're not supposed to readdress the same issue multiple times. But this is so important that I'm not going to let it go. I'm going to write on it over and over and over again, because my opinion is, Bidvar Asher Kasavti, what I wrote, Benidon Hazra'a Malachutit. Malachutit means mechanical, meaning artificial Hazra'a, insemination. Shahavlad Mamzer. The child is a Mamzer. And the consequences of that are earth-shaking. Hine, says the Satmar Rav, he says, L'shoma ozen shamati shish k'tzachs mefakakim zeh. I heard that there are people who are questioning this ruling, that the child is a mamzer. He says, I heard. Epis. He doesn't, in any of these Jews, he never mentions Rav Moshe by name. Yes?
I thought mamzer was
So this is exactly the machlokas. Rav Shechter Shalita, he points out that it's really two deus in a Tosfos in Yevamos. There was a landmark article on this, very important article from the late Gaon Tzadik, Halakha Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who makes the same point that Rav Shechter does based on this Tosfos. And that's the question. The question is whether or not the definition of mamzer is the consequence of a forbidden act, or mamzer means Me'im zar, mizar, from something which is foreign. Is it that there is a foreign mixture, and the fact that there is the sperm of one man and the egg of a married woman, that's what creates the mamzerus, which is the view of the Satmar Rav? Or, like Rav Moshe, is that it's dafka, the union between the people? This is the fundamental machlokas. If there are lots of articles, if you want more on this topic, in the 13th volume of the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society, Dr. Reichman has other ones. There's a lot written about this. But that lechora, that is the nekudas machlokas. How do you define the word mamzer? Right. So mamzer means a mamzer is the child of a union which is prohibited from a kari's perspective. There is another opinion in the Gemara that we don't accept. So if you have a married woman, that married woman is forbidden to any other men. It's an Isser kari's. So that's the concept of mamzer here. It would not apply to somebody who is not Jewish, because there's no tfisas kiddushin between a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man, and vice versa. So mamzerus is only the product of chai ve'karis, of an illicit relationship which carries with it the punishment of karis specifically. So the question is, well, what if that relationship happened artificially, and that there was no relationship between the two people in the first place? So this is the question. So let's say a kohen gadol who married a besula in violation of the din, that child would not be a mamzer because that relationship was not an iser karis. So this is, yeah. So the Satmar Rebbe was, I can't say with certainty, but if it came from the father, the Satmar Rebbe was probably the same way that the Chelkas Yaakov was largely opposed to it in general, to getting involved in these things. I'm not sure. I don't know. I did read the whole tshuva, what he would say if he was a proponent. Even Rav Moshe himself, by the way, it's interesting. Rav Moshe was not necessarily encouraging the couple to pursue these avenues in terms of a donor. He's just saying that there's no mamzerus. There's a second question about how advisable it is, which we'll see in a minute. So now you understand why this is such a big controversy. Because in the eyes of the Satmar Rav, the children who are going to walk out of the fertility clinic, eventually, right? If there's a sperm donor who's Jewish, that child is the mamzer. And if the sperm donor is not Jewish, the Satmar Rav gets into a whole other discussion about whether we want to introduce non-Jewish, you know, forces from a spiritual perspective. So the question is, let's go back to the beginning. What do we advise? So there is a tshuva here in the Minchas Asher, and this is where I think a lot of times these questions come up based on what we learned in this course. Rachmana litzlan lo aleinu. Rav Osher Weiss Shalita is living in Yerushalayim, Eretz Kodesh. He's one of the great Torah luminaries of our generation. He got the following very difficult shiloh. B'dvar hazug, regarding a couple, kishana la'acha nisueyem, they had a child a year after they got married that was pagua mochin upagua ivarn. The child was severely, severely disabled, mentally and physically. It turns out, bebirur geneti, in the genetic checkup that they did, the horim are carrying a gene which has a 50% chance that their children, the offspring, will have very, very serious defects. This is what is oftentimes the issue. So this brings us to a new frontier, which we talked about IUI, then we talked about IVF. This is something called PGD, pre-implantation genetic determination, where you can bring together in a petri dish several embryos and then examine them in the petri dish to figure out if any of them, lo aleinu, have defects, and discard the ones that have defects and only implant the ones that are healthy. Now, it's definitely mumlats to do genetic testing before a couple gets married so that they can figure out and obviate any of these issues on the front end. Yes, 100%. But what happens, this couple, this is the circumstance that they're in? Are they mechuyev to undergo this whole process? So the end of the tshuva, Rav Asher's wife says, Ein chovas hamitzvah ela maisa hativi. There's no obligation in the skinny paragraph here, second line. There's no obligation from a pur vavu standpoint except to fulfill the natural, normal way sheyesh biyad ha'adam lasos, that is in the hands of a person to do. They're not obligated to spend tens of thousands of dollars to do IVF with PGD. They're not mechuyev to do that. Aval me'ikar adin, they're not obligated to pursue new technologies. That are not natural. And Rav Shlomo Zalman writes the same thing. Ach, af she'ein zu chova gemura, says Rav Asher Weiss something very interesting. Even though it's not a firm obligation, vadai she'yesh l'odadam linho kein. We should support them. We should encourage them. We should have organizations and mostos to be able to help this couple. Ulis asek b'chol oz, and to work with all your strength, lahavi la'olam zera shel kayama zera ma'alya, that they should have healthy, wonderful children, yiddish nachas halavai. Velanias daiti, and even though it seems to me borer, da'afim ein bezechiyuv, even though there is no obligation, yesh beze mitzvah, superior verivya, there is a full, complete fulfillment of kiyum of puruvu with this IVF PGD child. Va'af b'derech zu mekayma adam mitzvahs puruvu kiyum kiyum al yod mikol makom, at the end of the day, hevi la'olam zera shel kayama. They brought into the world proper Jewish children. And not only that, there are other levels of kiyum, which we don't often think about. The Gemara says in Yevamos, says Rav Asher Weiss, yesh b'zeh kol hazgulos u'atzumos midivrei chazal b'mitzvah zu. The Gemara says that there are tremendous skulos in bringing children into the world. There is apparently, according to the Gemara, whatever this means, there is a suitcase, a trunk full of neshamas, called the guf, in the olam ha'elyon, whatever that means. And the Mashiach comes when all of the neshamas in this box make their way down through our world. So he says, you're bringing these spiritual sparks into the world. And not only that, you're mekayim the mitzvah of lo so bero l'sheves yitzara. The Gemara says, there's also a further mitzvah. Ve'ein ben David ba'at sheyichlu neshama shebeguf. So we should encourage, we should support. Because the mitzvah of puruvu is a mitzvah rabbah. In Europe, and Rav Shechter always talked about this, In Europe, the mitzvah of Pru Ruvu was front and center. What about families who didn't have this opportunity? So the mitzvah of Pru Ruvu is to raise up Jewish children. So you know what people would do? They would give tzedakah to orphanages. They would pay for another child's Jewish education in a day school. They would make a scholarship fund. So that too is an open of Pru Ruvu. Because even if a person themselves doesn't have Tzeres Shel Kayama, they are raising up a Jewish child. Because yes, there's the level of bringing the spark, that soul, into the world, but then, of course, there's raising the child of Al Pi Derech HaTorah. How important it is, Rav Asher Weiss says. And that's why there are many important mostos that do this work to help families to bring children into the world. And even though, yes, it is a big source of controversy, everybody has to ask their own posek, but it's an important conversation. So now let's back up to Sara Imenu and Nebuch, these poor couples who are suffering from infertility challenges. The Medrash says something that's important for a take-home. Because I can tell you, I saw in the lab, and we're all dressed with the coats, and we're like looking as if we know what we're looking at, right? They tell you this is this frozen embryo, and this is this microscope, and this is the freezer, and this is where they come in, this is where they do this, and this is where they do that. But what does it come back to? Ultimately, it's the Ribono Shel Olam. And the Medrash says something striking. Says Medrash Rabbah here in Mem Hei, in Oz Dalid. V'lomo nis'akru ha'imahos. Why were our matriarchs akaros? They couldn't have children. So the second opinion in the Medrash has to do with enhancing the intimate relationships that the avos and imahos had with each other, which is really interesting. Because that's also an important part of a healthy married life. But the first opinion, Reb Levi, Mishal, Reb Shila, the Kfar Tamarta, and Reb Chelbo, they both said in the name of Reb Yochanan. Pasuk says, Yonasi b'chag ve'hasela. Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, my beloved dove in the cleft of the rock. Yonasi, what does it mean, Yonasi? Shakarish Baruch Hu, mis'ave l'tfilasan. Hakarish Baruch Hu wants the tfilos and wants the conversation to happen. Shenema bechagve, lama akarti eschem. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, this is such a high level. It's an awesome medrash, awesome miloshin, awesome. Lama akarti eschem, Sarah. Why did you have no children for so long? Bishvil harini es marayach hashmini es kolech. Because I wanted you to daven. I wanted you to have a conversation with me. That there is an independent Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's beyond our grasp of our understanding. Things happen in the world, they should be a catalyst for tefillah. So what can we say about assisted reproductive technologies? That these should be a new catalyst for tefillah. Like the Ramban says that when a person goes to a physician, it's called in Shulchan Aruch, they should say, Shiei Esek Lila Refuah, they should have a little davening. You should whisper in the waiting room whenever we go. Hopefully it should be for good things. We should say, Ribono Shel Olam, this should be for a refuah. Because the opportunities, the vicissitudes that we have in life for tefillah can take many forms. And even if they might be challenging and difficult and painful and hard, they are a way to invite the Ribono Shel Olam into our lives. So much so that according to this opinion in the Medrash, the reason, the lama, for the imos, because they were on that level to be at that nisayon, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted a conversation. So halavai, we should all find ways to create the conversations with the Ribono Shel Olam without these struggles, without these difficulties, but to remember that the scientific advances that Hashem has given us don't replace, but only express HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon in the world.